Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top. You notice that we have a rare marking, a firebox, around the Tanu Rabbanan expression. This marking indicates that that which follows is of importance and will, text-wise, the amount of Gemara that will be dedicated to this will last at least an omid of Gemara. We have a Tanaic source that in and of itself will appear a bit obscure. The Gemara, as you go down the daf, will attempt to explain it. We'll in fact see a Machlokes, Abaye, and Rava on this topic. On the side of the Gemara, you see we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei being the topic heading, Mivneh the structural note. The house shape highlights the names Abaye and Rava, so get a bird's eye view of the material ahead of time. You see Abaye, and then scan down the page a little more than halfway down, you see Rava. And their machlokis is behesper hamoker deliel, the hesper of the source that will be opening up today's shir with. Another marking that you'll see will be a trapezoid shape, and that highlights the expression v'hochi kotoni, or hochi ko'omar. And on the side, you can see we've indicated this by explaining the hochi kotoni as nisyonis lahasber hamoker deliel. These are attempts to explain this source. Abai Vervel Cholkin, Be'i Amrinon, Tahamatbis Vishvua Dino Kishvua. This will be the central point of difference between Abai and Rava. If you are Matbis Vishvua, now the term Matbis means you are tacking on a prohibition to something that was already made forbidden through an oath, through a shavua. So if you do that, and we'll see concrete examples of this as we go through the Gemara, but if you tack on, if your matbis v'shavua doesn't have the same status of a shavua, dino kishavua, does it carry with it the same level of severity of prohibition as something that was made forbidden through a shavua itself? Let's now turn to the Gemara. As far as the triangle shape is concerned, we'll say a word about that when we get up to it. So we open up with a source. Now the source quotes words from Psukim. The Psukim from which these words are quoted are found in the Gemara as it unfolds. For example, the word Mivtah, you'll see if you go scan down halfway down the page, by Midbar Perek Lamed, you see the pasuk Vim Hoyos Yel Ish Nidoreh Aleha O Mivtos Faseha Asher Asro Al Nafsha. So you have the word Mivtos Faseha. The pasuk is describing a woman that entered marriage and she had vows. And the question that has to do with the husband being able to annul those vows. The word Isar, that you'll also see highlighted in this source, is found in another pasuk, O Asro Isar Al Nafsha. That's just a few lines up from the pasuk we just read, also cited in the Gemara text. So these are words that seem isolated or out of context, but recognize that they are really words from Psukim that deal with the matter of vows and oaths. So now, the Gemara. And again, the source that we're about to read is obscure, and that we have to wait for the Gemara to explain it. Tanu Rabbanan, Mivta equals Shavua. if a person uses the word Mivtah, he says, for example, Mivtah Kikar Zualai. He says regarding a loaf of bread that it is upon him a Mivtah. So that would be an expression of a vow. Isar, Shavua. The word Isar also indicates a Shavua. Isur Isar, Im Ata Oimer, Isar Shavua, Chayav V'imlav Potter. The closing phrase of this source is extremely difficult. The Gemara will ask about it. The translation would be that if you say that an Isar is a Shavua, then he is going to be bound. If not, then he's exempt. So the Gemara asks, Im ata omer Isar Shavua? Are you now like in doubt about that? Vo amris Isar Shavua? But just a moment before, in the very same source, you said that Isar is a Shavua, that the use of the word Isar in a oath type statement would have Shavua weight to it. So why does the source go on to express doubt about that? Omar Abaye, Hochi Ka'omar. So now you can see that we have a restatement of that source, how to understand it. So Abaye explains, Mivtah Shavua. Isar mitvis b'shvua. Here we see a change. Miftah, granted, that means a shvua. And we used an example before, taken from Rashi on the fourth narrow line. One who says, Miftah kikor zualai, is k'oimer shvua shloch lenu, Rashi says, v'imach areza ba'olav yorid. And if one does violate that oath, after having said Mivtah Kikar Zualai, if he were to go and eat it, he would then be guilty of bringing guilty of violating the oath and have to bring a korban. Oilu v'yuri that you saw in Rashi is a reference to a fluctuating price korban based on your income level. And then the source said Isar is mitvis b'shvua. What is meant by mitvis b'shvua? So Rashi says, Isar mitvis b'shvua, Isar olai kikar zu. Harehu kami shenishbala kikar, v'chozar v'yomar al kikar acher, hare ze kozet. Shehitvis es hasheni borisha. So mitvis b'shvua is a situation where a first loaf is made prohibited through the strength of an oath. And then, regarding a second loaf, after having said about the first loaf, it is prohibited to me through a shavua, you said regarding the second loaf, you said, I want this one to be like that one. Let us look at the Rach commentary as well, the Rabbeinu Hananel. You see in the middle of his commentary, we've marked it off, Isor mitvis v'shavua pirush kagon shenishbash lo yochal bosur zet. His example is using a piece of meat. He says he swore not to eat a certain piece of meat. V'chozer v'yomar ze hapas olai koze habosar. And then he says, this loaf of bread is upon me like that meat. Isar, kagon shehitfis oid dogim al oisoi hapas, shipis of a bosar. So Isar, this is a third item in the chain of items. He says regarding some fish that I want it to be like the bread, which he had previously aligned with the meat that he asserted that he prohibited through an oath. V'yomar im ata oimer matbis v'shvua kamotzi shvua mi piv domi chayav v'imlav poter. So now we go back to the source, we continue reading. After having seen the Rashi and the Rach explaining these expressions, Mivtah is a Shavua, Isar is Mitvis B'Shavua, Isur Isar, Im Ata Oimer Matvis B'Shavua Kemotzi Shavua Mipiv Domi Chayav. If you say that being Matvis B'Shavua, tacking on to a Shavua, is like a Shavua, So then those subsequent items will be bound, will be prohibited. V'imlav, potter. And if not, then you will be exempt. At this point, we have a bracketed section. The note on the side where you see a starred note, Achrei HaSugrayim, Mofia Rova, Shechilek Al Abaye, Behezber HaMokad Delil. After the brackets, Rova will appear, who argues as to how to explain the source. Besoch HaSugrayim, HaGmora, Mechapeses, Mekoros, Bepsukim, Lahazbir, Mifta, V'Isar. Within the brackets, the Gemara will be seeking out the source for these words, Miftah and Isar. Miftah being, according to Abaye, is a reference to an actual oath, and Isar being a reference to the power of tacking on to an oath. If we skip the bracketed section momentarily, use your bracket length indicator if you don't see where the bracket closes. So use the bracket length indicator, the vertical dash dotted line that you see to the side of the Gemara text. And then Rava appears right after that. Rava Omar, I'm skipping and reading Rava. Rava Omar, Li'olam Eimoloch Mitvis B'Shvua Lav Kemotzi Shvua Mipiv Domi. According to Rava, tacking on to a Shvua does not carry with it the strength of a Shvua. It doesn't create a prohibition like a Shvua. And then V'Hochi Komar, and Rava then gives his approach to the source. In the meantime, though, we go back to the beginning of the bracketed section, and the triangle appears, and under our Nosei Mivneh heading that we saw before on the side of the Gemara, you'll notice, if you're scanning ahead of the Gemara, you'll notice that the triangle directions alternate. So on the side, we've indicated this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back-and-forth type Gemara. The Gemara will present Mekoros, Bepsukim, Lahazbir, Mivta, V'Isar. When the triangle appears with the point facing up, the Gemara is trying to show sources for Miftah and Isar, and the inverted triangle represents the Chiyos rejections of whatever was suggested previously. Umimai de Miftah Shvua. From where do we know that Miftah is a reference to an oath? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, O nefesh ki sishova levate bisfosayim. So you can see that the word levate has the same root as the word miftah, indicating that tishova levate, that indicates miftah is an oath. Well, if that's your source, isor nami, dechtiv kol neder v'chol shvuas isar. So then isar would have the same status. As you can see in this pasuk, the word isar is preceded by the word shvuah. Just like in the pasuk before, it said kisi shavah levatei. Here you have shvuas isar. So why does Abaye's understanding of the source indicate that isar is something else? Elo mimai di isar mitvus v'shvuhu. So how does Abaye know that isar is tacking on to a shvuah? Dichtiv o asra isar al nafsha b'shvuah. So grammatically, it would seem to be that a person does an isar into bishvua, means into a shvua, means we're onto a shvua, tacking onto a shvua. Well, if that's the case, mivta nami hoksiv l'chol asher yivate ha'odom bishvua. So you see the same type of structure scripturally. So mivta would also then be tacking on to a shvua. Elo Omar Abaye, Miftah equals Shvua Mehocha. From the following, Miftah will be clearly a reference to a Shvua in contrast to Isar. What does the Pasuk say? V'imhoyo si alish unidor aleo o Miftah sfoseh asher osral nafsha. So you have in this Pasuk the word Miftah. V'ilu Shvua lo komar, there's no Shvua word. So that the word Miftah stands on its own. B'mai osra atzma. The woman described in this pasuk bound herself by an oath. But where was the oath expression? B'miftah. Rava Omar, li'oilom eimoloch, mitvis b'shvua, lav kemoitzi shvua mipiv domi. attaching something or tacking on to a shvua is not like an original oath. V'hachi komar, and thusly we are to understand the source. Again, this is number two. We're giving Rava's explanation of the source that was featured at the opening of the Gemara, where we had our firebox marking. The source would read, Mivtah equals Shvua. Isar nami Shvua. The word Isar also is a lashon, an expression of an original oath. Asrei de Isar, the strength, the source of the effectiveness of Isar, Hetilo Hakosuv Bei Neder Lishvua. You find it's positioned in the scriptures between Neder, which is a vow, and Shvua, an oath. Hotzio Belosha Neder Neder. If you used an expression that, or a text that would indicate a vow, so then it will have the strength of a vow. Belosha Shvua Shvua. And if you used a text that would indicate an oath, it would have the strength of an oath. Elsewhere, the Gemara deals with what are the differences between a shvua and a neder. In other words, what practical differences are there? For our purposes, though, it's not important to state what the differences are, other than we'll point out that in the case of a violation of a neder, of a vow, there is no sacrifice that is brought. In the case of a shivua violation, the Torah requires a sacrifice to be brought. On the side of the Gemara, Isar ze hitilu hakasuf. Rashi says, Hainu pirush di isur isar im ata oimer. In the original Brisa, we saw that expression. Here, Rava is explaining what that expression meant. V'hachi ka'omar. Rashi continues, Isur shel Isar shamarti loch shuvua. The strength of Isar as an oath, lo kol halishon shavus bo. Not all texts are the same. Shari tivu kosev bein neder lishvua im amirasa b'loshin shvua. If you use the word Isar using a shvua text, what would that be? Kegoin Isar shelo ochal kikar ze. Kein loshin anishboin omrim. The people who take oaths say shelo ochal. And the Gemara mentions elsewhere that an oath is, generally speaking, person related, person focused, as opposed to item focused. So here the person is saying, I will not eat it. Af ho isar shetzi b'loshon ze equals shvuhu v'chayev korban. Therefore, if you say isar shelo ochal kikar ze, and then you go ahead and eat the loaf, that's a violation of the oath, of the shvua, and you'd have to bring a sacrifice. Vimlav, and if you didn't formulate the Isar using a text like that, Elohotziyah v'loshon neder shomar Isar kikar zu olai. If you use an expression like that, which is item-focused, you're focusing on the loaf. This loaf is upon me, an Isar. Shu loshon hanodrim. That's the text that people who vow would use. Kunim ze olai. That's the more formal loshon neder. Af ze. So to this case of saying Isar kikar zu olai neder upoter mikorban. And if one goes ahead and violates it, he's in violation of the vow, but he doesn't bring a sacrifice. So now we continue in the Gemara. Hechon hetilo. Where do you find the word Isar placed between neder and shvuah? So the answer is here. V'imbeis isha nadara o asra Isar al nafsha b'shvuah v'chulei. Notice we squiggle underline the word Isar, and to either side of it, before it, you see the word Neder, and after you see the word Shvua. V'ozdu l'tamayu. You find Abaye and Rava appearing here consistent with what they say elsewhere. The Itmar. Mat bisvishvua. Tacking on a second item to something that was previously prohibited through the power of Shavua. Abaye Omar kemoitzi shvua mi pivdomi. Abaye says that matvis vishvua is as if you uttered an actual oath. The Rava Omar lav kemoitzi shvua mi pivdomi. It does not have the strength of uttering an actual oath. Notice that we have a long question. This long question will continue till the top of Amud Beis. Just by using the markings and scanning ahead for a moment, you can see that second line from the bottom, Bishlomo Abaye, that things will work out initially for Abaye, and leaving Rava with a difficulty. So, very simply put, we have a long question on Rava. What did Rava say? Rava said that matvis b'shvua is not like a shvua. Meisvei, ezu isa ha'omur b'torah, ha'omer harei olai shelo ochal bosor v'shelo eshte yayin, k'yoyim shemeis boi aviv. A person says that he will not consume meat, he won't drink wine, like the day that his father died. Kiyom shemeis bo ploni, or like the day that so-and-so died. Kiyom shenerag bo gedalia ben achikam, or like the day that the personality in the Tanakh, Gedalia, who was appointed a leader of the Jewish people at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash destruction, and when he was killed, so there was a fast day that was observed. We continue to observe till this very day, called Som Gedalia. Kiyom Shiro Yerushalayim B'churbana Aser. Or he says that he's not going to drink wine or consume meat, like the day that he saw Jerusalem in its destruction. So any of these examples form a restrictive, we'll call it a restrictive vow. Also means he's bound. V'yomar Shmuel, v'hu shenodur ubo me'oisoi hayoyim. For this vow to be effective, so it would have to be based on the reality that the original day referred to here. For example, Yom Shemeis Bo'aviv, that on that day he had vowed not to eat, not to eat meat, not to drink wine. Then he goes along and goes and says that he wants, regarding a subsequent day, to be like that day. What is he doing then? He's tacking on. He's tacking on some subsequent day to be like the original day that he had bound, they had forbidden himself. He had vowed not to eat meat nor drink wine. Let's take a look at Rashi. V'hu, let's first Rashi. Kiyoyim shemeis bo'aviv. Kasher osarti olai boser b'yom shemeis bo'abo li'oylam. The person had vowed on the day that his father died, that on that day, we'll call that the yortzeit, on the annual recurrence of that year, of that day, he will not eat meat nor drink wine. And then he said, regarding some subsequent time, he says, I want this day to be like that day. Rashi goes on, V'hu shenodur bo b'yisayom, shekib olav kvar neder, shelo yochal boser b'yom shemeis bo aviv l'olam, v'chein yom shemeis bo ploni, v'chein yom shenei bo gadaya, v'kosal kadaita hashto, dahenu matpis b'neder. He's saying that some subsequent day should be like that day that he originally had vowed not to eat meat nor drink wine. V'katani ezu isur omer b'torah shu b'lo yachil dvoro. What is an example of a prohibition that if one violates it would be guilty of this teaching, this negative command, lo yachil dvoro, do not violate your words. A pasuk from the Torah. What do we see from this? Hamafis beneder hareu below yachel keneder atzmo, that one who tacks on to an original neder is like an original neder, and just like the violation of original neder is bebal yachel dvoro is considered a violation of that negative command, so too your violation of that which you tacked on to it. Neder, and here we come to the main point. Just like you see that attaching to a neder carries with it the strength of a neder being a vow, makbis v'shvua, shvua. And this is what Abaye had said. So now we continue in the Gemara. B'yomar Shmuel, Shmuel explains how this source is to be understood. As we explained already, you have an individual who on the day that his father died, or on the day that he saw Jerusalem in its destruction, he had vowed on that day, he is not going to ever eat meat nor drink wine. And then he said, regarding some other day, I want this other day to be like that day. Bishlamo l'Abaye. So this approach will work out well according to Abaye. This source is illustrating matbis beneder, where the original day was prohibited through the power of a vow, and the subsequent days that he referred to when he said hare olai. Like that original day, we have several examples of those original days here, that all any subsequent day that he refers to will be like that original day. That's matbis beneder, and just like that has strength, that has the those subsequent days that he refers to be like the original day is binding. Matbis b'shvua shvua. Attaching a second item onto some original item that was prohibited as a shvua is also binding. Well, that's Abaye's point of view. Ella, la Rava, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, but according to Rava, Kashya, this presents a difficulty to Rava. Rava said that matbis b'shvua does not have the strength of a shvua. Omar loch Rava. Rava answers that Tritz v'Eimahachi, understand the source that we cited differently. In other words, the source that we cited with Yom Shemes Bo Aviv, Yom Shemes Bo Shenag Bo Gadai Ben Achikam, etc., that source is not talking about Matbis Beneder to begin with. Rather, understand it as follows. Ezehu Isar Neder Ha'omur B'Torah. Notice, Isar Neder. We're talking here about an original vow. What is an example of an original vow? Ha'omur Ha'reolai Shalo'ocha Boser V'Shalo'esh Deyayin Kiyoim Shemes Boi Oviv Kiyoim Shenerag Boi Ploni V'Omar Shmuel V'hu shenodur ubo me'oisoi hayom. Now here we must resort to the Rashi commentary on the top line. Tritz v'ema klomar. Hai tana la b'matfis b'neder airi. The tana is not referring to tacking something onto an original vow. Elobikr neder airi is talking about the original vow. V'ashminen. Then it's informing us she'enu chayev b'neder elim kein pirshehu v'achar kach toloi b'dover hanidur olov kvar. How does an actual vow operate? You are going to be prohibiting yourself from something, and you are comparing this prohibition to something else that had been made prohibited through your words. Kediyolif law v'ozil mikro v'hochi komar. Esu isur neder. What has the strength of a vow, an original vow? That's what is the concern of this source. Avomatis beneder lav neder hu. But tacking on to a neder is not like an original vow. I'm sure you're all wondering, what's the difference between the two? Behechi domi matpis. What is a case of matpis? Kagon shelo piresh hare olai shelo ochal bosar v'shelo eshtayin. Where you don't spell all of that out. Elo omar, all matpis would be, is where he says, Elo omar hare olai yoim ze ke yoim shemes boi oviv. Or kiyom shiro es Yerushalayim b'churbana. Notice the difference. Matfis is all you're saying is hare olai yoim zeh kiyom shemes bo'ovev v'chulei, etc. You're not spelling out hare olai shelo ochal bosar, where you spell out I am accepting upon myself the restriction of eating meat, of drinking wine, like the day that father died, which is a day that he had vowed also not to eat meat nor drink wine. And that's what Shmuel means when he says, "V'hu shenodur ubo me'ois hayom," that when you are saying about some subsequent day that you want it to be like the day father died, which was a day of meat restriction for this individual, that original day that father died, or day that so-and-so died, or day that he saw Jerusalem in ruins, that he had vowed on that day not to eat meat nor drink wine. If that's the case, then when you refer to a subsequent day and say, Hare, as we saw in Rashi, Hare olai shelo ochal basar v'shelosh tayin, Kayom Shemes Bov, then it's effective. The Gemara goes on to say, my time, what is the source for this? Omar Kro, Ish Kidor Neder Lashem. That's the basic pasuk, and the explanation is Ad Shiyodur Bedover Hanodur. When, how does a vow operate? It's when you make something prohibited, comparing it to something that originally was made prohibited through your words. Now, I will, just to digress for a moment, the classic example of a neder is where someone was prohibiting an item and paralleling it to a sacrifice. What's the nature of a sacrifice? A sacrifice is an animal that was previously chulin, common, permitted, and you made it usher, you sanctified it. So it's through your words that the animal became a sacrifice, became, and hence prohibited for personal benefit. A sacrifice is kodesh, is holy. You cannot derive personal benefit from it. And then you said, regarding whatever item, a loaf of bread, a cell phone, a book, and you said, I want this book. This book is now prohibited upon me like a sacrifice. This is in contrast to someone who would say, for example, I am accepting upon myself a restriction of reading this book like pig is usher. That wouldn't be an effective vow. Why not? Because pig is something that is usher anyway, without your having made it prohibited. And that's in essence what Shmuel is teaching, that you have to base your current vow on something, you're comparing it to something that was previously made usur through your statement, through your words. The Gemara continues, Kayoim Shemeis Boyoviv Pshita. What is significant about this example? Is it not obvious? And Rashi explains what's bothering the Gemara. Once you told me that a vow is effective, is binding, provided the original day is a day that you imposed a restriction or a prohibition upon it. So what is the significance of mentioning this example of Yom Shemeis Boyoviv? Once you say that that day happened to be a day that you made usur through your own vowing, so it's that knowing that rule would be enough. Do I need this example? So the Gemara says, in truth, you don't need that specific example. But kiyom shenerag bo gedai ben achikom itzdirich lei. The additional example in the source is necessary to teach. So you have at times in Tanaic sources several examples. Some might be obvious, others not, and I'll end up teaching certain things along with others. In this case, I need to get to that specific example of Yom Shenag Bo Gedai Ben Achikom. Now, we mentioned earlier that a fast day was established commemorating the execution, the killing, the murder of Gedalia ben Achikam. Salka Daito Chamino. Without this Tanaic source, I would have thought, Kevon Dechi Loi Nodar Nami Oser, even if a person had not vowed on that day, not vowed to restrict himself from eating meat and drinking wine, he's usher anyway. He can't eat meat anyway. It's called, in the scriptures, it's called Soim Hashvi'i, the fast of the seventh month. The seventh month, when you start your month counting from Nisan, Tishrei, in which Soim Gedalia falls out, the third of Tishrei, the day after Rosh Hashanah. That's the seventh month. Nisan is the first. Nisan Iyar Sivan Tammuz of Elul Tishrei. So if you're counting, you'll find it's the seventh month. And it's alluded to already in the Psukim as being a day prohibited in eating. It's a tzom, it's a fast day. So I would have thought that even without your having vowed not to eat meat and drink wine on Tzom Gedalia, on that third of Tishrei, you would have been usher anyway. Ki nodar nami lo havyo olei isur, v'hai lav matvis benederhu. Even if you had not vowed on that day, it would have been usher anyhow. So that when I refer to a subsequent day and say that I am not going to eat meat and drink wine like the day that Gedalia was executed, since that day, that original day, was usher without your having made a vow, so that my paralleling or comparing a subsequent day to that day would not be considered matvis beneder. If you recall, we used the example, if I compare this loaf, I'm prohibiting myself from eating this piece of bread like pig. That's not a binding vow. So to over here, the Yom Shemeis Bo or Nerag Bo Gedalia Ben Achikam was prohibited anyway. Komash Molon, what this source reveals to us is that when you vowed not to eat on Tzom Gedalia, you actually imposed an additional level of prohibition without which Tzom Gedalia would not have been prohibited on the same level. And this explanation you can see in the Rabbeinu Hananel. We have it marked with a star. Komash Malon Meikora Ihave Achil. Originally, had he eaten on Tzom Gedalia without your having vowed not to eat on that day, so havikoy bisur d'rabbanan, you would have been in violation of a non-Torah level offense, called a rabbinic level offense. The Torah in the five books of Moses, there's no reference to Tzom Gedaliah. Hashta, however, now that you had vowed on Tzom Gedaliah not to eat meat nor drink wine, Isura Doraisahi, Mishum Bal Yachil Devoro. Now it has a Torah level prohibition to it. And with that knowledge, now I understand how I can compare a subsequent day to Yom Shnei Rag Bo Gedaliah Ben Achikam. V'af, the Gemara continues, V'af Rabbi Yochanan Sofer Lo Laha De Rava. Rabbi Yochanan also holds by Rava's teaching. Dechi Osa Ravin Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mivda Lo Ochalach Isar Lo Ochalach Shvua. Miftah and Isar, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, we've dashed underline Isar is a reference to Shvua. Notice we dashed underline Shvua as well, that Isar represents an original Shvua. Not like Abaye, who said that Isar was a reference to Mitvis B'Shvua, tacking on to a Shvua. Before we go further in the Gemara, we notice on the side we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. A crown shape appears, and we also have it numbered as one. You scan ahead on this Omid Beis of the Daf Chofen Beis, you don't notice number two, but where there's a one, there has to be a number two. You'll notice it on Chof Aleph Omid Aleph, six lines from the top, a second crown, Kiyosa Ravin. On the side, we've indicated Machloikis Ravdimi V'Ravin, Eich lehagdir, achalti or lo achalti, a person swears, I ate, or he swears, I didn't eat. Is this considered a shvuas shav, or a shvuas sheker? These are different categories of oaths, and there are practical nafkaminas, the practical differences in knowing how to categorize these oaths. So, the focus is going to be, we'll call it a past tense oath, where he swears either he ate or he swears he didn't eat, and then it turns out that he was lying about it. That's one issue that's going to come up here. Now, a second issue. Ma loimdin milo yachel devoro. What do we learn from that pasuk? A third point. Ochal lo ochal, ma gidro. If a person, let's say, swears to eat in the positive, or he swears not to eat, how do we categorize that? So we're going to see Rav Dimi and his approach to these points. And as we get into the Gemara a bit further, triangles will begin to appear, and you'll notice that they appear in an alternating direction. So we've indicated it's a ma'atav, with the point facing up. Well, these will be kushus on Rav Dimi, there'll be questions on Rav Dimi, and the inverted triangle chuvos responses. Now the Gemara. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar Rav Yochanan. Rav Dimi quotes Rav Yochanan, Ochal v'lo ochal, sheker. V'azorosei mehocha, lo sishavu b'shmi l'shoker. A person who swears to eat something, or he swears not to eat something. These are future tense expressions. So we call this a shvua l'haba. This is called, according to Rav Dimi, a shvuas sheker. And the source in the Torah for this is Lo Sishavu Bishmi Lashoker. It's important to realize that before the court can administer a court-based punishment, for example, lashing, there has to be a warning to the potential offender. And in the warning, you have to specify what the scriptural source for the offense is. If there is an inaccuracy in the warning, that could result in the non-punishment of the individual. The Rashi across from here says, "V'azarase mehocha, v'azarase milosisho v'shmilashuk v'achikomar." Lo sisho, and what is the pasuk then telling me? Lo sishavu b'shmi, don't vow or don't swear in my name. Kedei l'shakir b'shvuaschem li'achar zman, so that you don't come to deal falsely after a while in the oath that you made. V'masreboi, one who issues the warning against the potential offender, tzorch lahasreis boi shu'ever b'azoras lo sishavu b'shmi l'shog. He has to indicate that this posuk is the basis for his potential offense. Let's continue in the Gemara, number 2. Ochalti v'lo ochalti. If a person swears, I ate, or I did not eat, and it turns out that he's lying, equals shov. That's an empty oath. Shov is an expression. It's not so important to translate it. It's often translated in English as an oath in vain. V'azorase mehocha, the source for this is lo siso eshem Hashem Elokecha lashov. Do not bear the name of the Almighty in vain. And a third category, koinomos. If a person had vowed using the konom expression, konom, when you learn Maseches Nedarim, you discover it's an alternative to the word korban. It's actually a personal type restriction. For example, a person says, koinom kikor zu alai. If a person uses an expression like that, konom kikor zu alai, he's in effect prohibiting the loaf of bread to himself, that he won't eat that loaf of bread. It's not like an actual sacrifice which is prohibited to everybody. It's a personal restriction. So let us say one actually had said koinom kikor zu alai, and then he went ahead and ate it. Oiver b'lo yachil dvor. He's in violation of the Torah teaching that says, do not violate your words. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Ochalti v'lo ochalti. And this, by the way, is in contrast to what the expression of ochal v'lo ochal, which was future, that indicates, according to Rav Dimi, that is called a shvuas sheker. The past tense vow is shvuas shov. It's called shov, and Rashi says, ochalti v'lo ochalti, kol shvu l'sheovar she'eno emes. Any past tense oath that's not true, kruyo shvuas shov. The loshen shov, loshen v'lo klum. It's an expression meaning emptiness. Kamo b'chav le'oshov, loshofi keses penechem. These are psukim that use the word shov with that explanation in mind. Something that was for naught. Afkan yotso mipiv levatola. So too, words of emptiness came forth. In other words, you swore that you did not eat something when in fact you did eat it. So what are your words? Your words are called lo klum. They're called empty. Vasarasim lo siso. Vamikra hazeh tzorach lahasras bo. And as we indicated before, that when you warn someone before he commits an offense, you have to warn him using this expression, this pasuk. No, telling him, no, that if you're lying, you will be in violation of this particular verse. The next Rashi, koinomos harei ze b'lo yachel, klomar, lo yachel, the mashma lahabo, the pasuk that says lo yachel, do not violate. Now that has a future connotation. Lav lazoras shvuas lahabasa. This is not coming as a Torah prohibition against a future-based oath, like we had before in the case of ochal or lo ochal. The shvuas lahaba milos yishav l'bishmir ashkenaz nafi. According to Rashi, a future tense shvua has its own source. As he said, it's milos yishav l'bishmir ashkenaz nafi. Means it's learned out from there. V'chiyasa lo yachel lazaros nedorim also. The purpose of lo yachel is to serve as a scriptural prohibition against false oaths, not false, again, the correction, false vows, as opposed to false oaths. Mafuke mi deravna mazor shvuas lahaba asa milo yachel. This is in contrast to Ravin that says that the Torah prohibition against a shvua lahaba is in fact from this pasuk. So we have a machlokis, and we indicated in our marking explanation that Rav Dimi will contrast with Ravin, and here you can see one of those points of contrast. So now we go back to the Gemara, having pointed at me three separate points that ochal or lochal is categorized, it's a future tense issue of an oath, potentially false or something you can violate, and that would be a shvuas sheker, the past tense of false oath is called a shvuas shav, and kainomos is the subject of lo yachel devoro. If you were to skip to the second approach, the Ravin approach, you can see immediately that he says ochalti v'lo ochalti is sheker. This is in contrast to Rav. When I say skip ahead, means you would look at Chof Aleph, Omen Aleph, seven lines from the top. You see, ochalti v'lo ochalti is presented as sheker. What did Rav Dimi say about ochalti v'lo ochalti? He called that shav. And according to Ravin, the ochal v'lo ochal, that's the future tense shvua, that's prohibited through lo yachel devoro. That is in contrast with Rav Dimi's approach, who said that lo yachel devoro was a source for kainamos. In fact, when you look at Ravin there on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, you'll notice that he doesn't speak immediately about konamos whatsoever. Let us now continue with the Gemara and its questions and answers on Rav Dimi's teaching. Another marking that we didn't introduce before is under the Nosei Mivneh heading, you'll see a trapezoid shape. Pirushim Shainim Lebraisa de Gotoni Shav Sheker Echonheim. We're going to see a Tanaic source that opens up this section of Gemara, and the meaning of that source will be featured with this shape, this trapezoid shape. So we open up with a question, Mesvei. Shav Vesheker Echonheim. My love, what does this source mean? Midashav Lishaovar. Af sheker nami l'sha'ovar. Alma, the result of saying that just like a shvuas shav is past tense. What is an example of shvuas shav? It's where you swear contrary to something that is public knowledge. In other words, there's something that's clearly a piece of wood, and you swear this is a piece of iron. That's a shvuas shav. Now, the identity of the item is something that's already been established. It's a past tense issue. So, this source says that shav and sheker are one and the same, just like shav is something of a past tense nature. Af sheker nami is also a past tense nature. Alma ochalti v'lo ochalti sheker hu. So that swearing falsely, having sworn that I ate when you didn't, or that I didn't eat when you did, that would be sheker. And that is not like Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi said that a future tense oath is called Shvuah Sheker, and this Tanaic source seems to be saying that a past tense oath would be categorized as Shvuah Sheker. The Gemara responds with a long response. We've marked it off thusly. Midi Irya. Is it necessarily so? Ha kidi Isa v'ha kidi Isa. Each one is as it is, namely, Shav is past, Sheker is future. Umay Dover Echon, if you're now saying that they're really different ideas, then but the source says they're one in the same. What do you mean they're one in the same? De Bedibor Echod Namru. They were stated by the Almighty in one statement. Kidisanya, this idea of, say, two ideas being stated as one is illustrated in the following Tanaic source, which deals with Shabbos. And when you look at the presentation of the Torah, of the Aseres HaDibros, there are two Aseres HaDibros presentations in the Torah. The original Aseres HaDibros and the subsequent Aseres HaDibros. In one, in Sefer Shmois, Parshas Yisro, the Shabbos Dibor, the fourth command in the Ten Commandments, opens with the word Zohar. And in Parshas Veschanan, in Sefer Dvorim, the fourth commandment opens up with the word Shamor. So, Zohar v'Shamor b'Dibor Echod Nemru, Mashein Apeh Yochol Ledaber, Mashein Oizen Yochol Lishma. A human mouth cannot say two things at once, nor can hear two things simultaneously. So too, the command concerning not to take a Shvuah Shav, nor to take a Shvuah Sheker, were said by the Almighty in one statement, and we subsequently understand it as two separate things. That's what Echod Hain meant in the original source. As far as Shabbos is concerned, Zohar v'Shama b'dibur Echod Nemru, what practical bearing does that have for us? So Rashi gets into that a bit, and he explains that with that knowledge, I then understand that women who in general are not commanded to heed or adhere to the commandments that are positive in nature with a time element, a time-bound element to a positive command. We call that mitzvah saseh shazman groma, nosh turos. When it comes to Shabbos, they are bound. In other words, a woman, for example, is obligated in the positive command of reciting Kiddush on Shabbos. Even though Shabbos is a positive, that aspect of Shabbos is positive and time related, which, as we said, women would generally be prohibited, exempted from. Not so with regard to Shabbos, because women are bound by all the negative commands in the Torah, as is reflected by the word shomor. So Zohar and shomor b'dibur echo nemru has that practical ramification. We continue in the Gemara. Bishlama Hossam, we've highlighted the words Hossam and Hocha with a house shape, and this helps you also in the reading. In a moment we're going to see a bracketed section. So, and we're going to skip the bracketed section initially. The Gemara says, Bishlama, I understand there, in the case of Shabbos, B'dibur Echod Nemru, K'derav Ada Barava. That has practical value, and we explained already. The Gemara will point that out in the bracketed section. We had mentioned Rashi. Of course, Rashi takes it from the Gemara. Just skip the brackets momentarily. Elohacha, l'may hilchasam iboyele, of what point? point? What point is there in telling me that Shov and Sheker were stated simultaneously by the Almighty? Now, let's go over the Gemara again with the brackets. We said, Bishlam Ahasam, I understand that you can, that in the case of Shabbos, Zohar v'Shomar, Dibur Echad Nemru, Kidir Ravado Baravo, the Yomar Ravado Baravo, Noshim Chayovas B'Kiddush Hayom Dvar Torah. Women are bound on a Torah level to recite Kiddush on Shabbos. The Yomar Kro, Zohar v'Shomar. Kol Sheyeshno B'Shmira, Yeshno B'Shmira. All those who are bound by the Shmira aspects of Shabbos, that's a reference to negative commands, not to do the malachas of Shabbos. Yeshnu b'schira are also bound by the positive commands of Shabbos schira, a reference to Kiddush. V'hani noshi, women, hayo v'isnu b'shmira, isnu nami b'schira, since they are bound to observe the negative commands of Shabbos, they are also bound regarding the positive commands of Shabbos, and we explained before, even though they are time-bound, they're restricted to Shabbos. Nevertheless, since women are obligated in desisting from constructive activity on Shabbos, so too they're obligated in these positive commands of Shabbos. Elohacha, but here by the issue of Shav and Sheker, Lamai Yuchasam Iboyale, what teaching comes forth from this? The Gemara answers, Ella Kishem. So here what we are seeing is another approach to understanding what Shav V'Sheker Echad Hay means. Ella Kishem. And that's what we indicate with the trapezoid shape. Ella Kishem Sheloike Al Shav Kach Loike Nami Al Sheker. Just like there is lashing for one who violates a Shvuas Shav, so too there is lashing for one who violates a Shvuas Sheker. The Gemara asks, Klapi Laya. Without translating that, it means things should be in the opposite direction. Klapi Laya literally means, where are you going? In other words, what you just said really should have been stated in the opposite. So the Gemara says, okay, so rather say, Kishem Sheloik Al Sheker, Kach Loike Nami Al Shof. Just like there's lashing for Sheker, which, as you can see, the Gemara feels that there should be lashing for Sheker is more obvious. So the Chiddush of the source is, just like there's lashing for Sheker, there is also lashing for one who violates a Shvuas Shof. Now, why is one more obvious than the other? So the answer to that is that a Shvuas Sheker, especially using the Rav Dimi approach that it's a future tense type oath, a person says, he vows, he will not eat something. Shvuas Shelo Ochal Kikrozeh. Then he goes ahead and eats it. That is an action that's called a lav sheyesh boy maisa. He's violated a negative command by doing an action. And throughout the Torah, we find that violations of negative commands, the violation which is manifest through an action, results in lashing. So that's obvious, and there's a source for that in the Torah. Pasuk says, Lo sachsam shor b'disho. And right next to that is that pasuk refers to thou shalt not muzzle an ox while it's threshing. And if you thresh with a muzzle ox, so you're in violation of that negative command. And right next to that in the Torah, the pasuk speaks about lashing, the punishment of Malchus. So we know that Malchus is given for the violation of negative commands through your doing a prohibited action. So Shvuah Sheker lends itself to that. However, a Shvuah Shav, that doesn't lend itself in the classic sense. What is the nature of a Shvuah Shav? We explained already. That's something of a past tense. There's no action involved. You simply swear about something that had already taken place. So the source tells me that just like for Shvuas Sheker there is lashing, there is also lashing for Shvuas Shav. Now, what's the basis of saying that? So Rashi reveals this. Elo'eimo k'shem sheloikal sheker. Rashi says, "Belav sheyesh boi maise, kach loike al shav. Afal pi she'ein bo maise." Even though there's no action involved when you're violating that, you're simply it's simple speech. You swore falsely about something that had already happened. The nafkalei, it's learned out that there is lashing for this. It's learned out. Milo yinake Hashem kidla. Come on, the Gemara will explain something about Chof Aleph. And we say in that pasuk, which says, "Lo yinake Hashem, Hashem will not cleanse you." Hashem hu de lo yinake. The Almighty doesn't cleanse you. Avol beizin shomata malkinoisoi im hisubo menakinoisoi. However, the earthly court could cleanse him through the violator being lashed, assuming that he was warned ahead of time. So there's a scriptural reference to lashing for Shvuas Shav violation as well. That leads us into the Gemara's question. Pshita, hai lav v'hai lav. Both Sheker and Shav are accounted for by the Torah by negative commands. And negative commands lead to lashing. When you have a lav sheyesh bo maaseh, so we explained already, that has a general Torah source. And this lo yinake Hashem is a specific source for a shvuas shav. So the Gemara explains, mahu detema, I might have thought, without this source, kidomar le rav papa le abaye, that the pasuk of lo yinake Hashem as asher yisod shmoy lashav is to be understood like Rav Papa had suggested to Abaye, lo yinake klal, that it's a type of sin that has no cleansing. We continue at the top of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, komash malon kideshoni lei. The source serves as a basis for that which Abaye answers Rav Papa, as we just saw in Rashi. Namely, that the pasuk of Lo Yinake Hashem as Asher Yisro Shmuel Hashav comes to tell me that Hashem doesn't cleanse him, but Beis Din does. Because if it was to be understood like Rav Papa explained, why does the pasuk add Hashem to it? It could have simply said Lo Yinake as Asher Yisro Shmuel Hashav, that someone who bears God's name in vain has no cleansing whatsoever. By adding Hashem to the pasuk, we then understand, like Abaye answers Rav Papa, that Hashem doesn't do the cleansing, but the Beis Din does through lashing. Another approach to the source that said Shav v'sheker achas hein is as follows. Kishen shemevi, and by the way, do you notice the trapezoid? It's another explanation to that source of Shav v'sheker achas hein. And what is it telling me? Kishem shemevi korban al sheker, kach mevi korban al shav. For Rebbe Akiva hi, te mechayev l'shavar kilahaba. Just like one brings a sacrifice for the violation of sheker, so too one will have to bring a sacrifice if he violates a shav. And this would be in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, that holds the Mechayev L'Sha'avar, that holds that even for past tense oath violations, which is something like Shav, Ochalti V'lo Ochalti, Ke Lehaba, like a future violation, a Shvuas Sheker. The Rashi at the top line, V'boy esay mahadi katoni shav v'sheker achasein lo maloch, k'shem shemei v'korban al shvuas sheker, just like one brings a korban, a sacrifice for violating a shvuas sheker, kach mevi korban al shav. De'achalti v'lo achalti. V'Rabbi Kiva hi. This parallel, it conforms only to Rabbi Kiva's approach. So that source of Shav v'Sheker Achas Hen would be in accordance with Bekiva, the Mechayev, the Masnisen, the Shav HaKilabo. That holds that for past tense violations, one is guilty just like he would be for a future tense violation. Mesvei. Here we're going to have a Tanaic source that's going to pose a challenge to our descriptions till now. Up till now, the last line we read in the Gemara was Rabbi Kiva is Mechayev l'Shovar k'lahabo. He's Mechayev on a Shvua Shilovar, which is Shov, just like on Lahabo. And what's Lahabo? The Shvua Sheker. Well, what do we see in the following source? Mesvei, a zohi shvuas shav. What is a shvuas shav? Nishpa lohoshanus es yodua lodom. One who swears to change, meaning through his words, he's swearing to the contrary of what is common knowledge. We used an example before. He swears regarding a piece, what something that's obviously a piece of wood, and he swears that it's iron. Shvuas sheker nishpa lehachlif. Someone who swears to change that which has already been established. Rashi on the fourth line from the top says, "Nishba lahachlif lishanos es haemes b'shvuaso." In through his oath, he's trying to change that which is in fact the truth. Hainu l'sha'avar. And here is this is the key point. Nishba lahachlif indicates it's a past tense shvua. Kigon ochalti, the lo ochal. He swears I ate when he didn't eat. Or lo ochalti, he swears I didn't eat. The ochal when he in fact did eat. So the question that this source presents to us is that a shvua sheker is essentially a past tense entity, not like we have presented it till now. The Gemara responds, Emo nishba u'machlif. He swears, and then in the future, he goes against, he switches, literally, he switches mean he goes against that which he had sworn beforehand. So this is again a reference to what we said before, that a sheker, a shvua sheker is future tense. Nishba u'machlif. And with that, then we've presented Rav Dimi quoting Rav Yochanan as to how to explain the different categories of shvuas. A future tense is called shvua sheker. Past tense is called shvua shav. And that leads us into then Ravin's approach, which will stand in contrast to the Rav Dimi approach, and Mirza Shemin in our next shiur, so we'll see that. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.